Welcome to Press Play OK, your local music podcast, getting to know musicians from across Oklahoma. On this episode, we sit down with Ryan and Noah of the Fabulous Minx, Tulsa's denim-wearing, trouble-starting rock and rollers. So grab your saxophone and join us on Press Play OK.
Support for this podcast comes from Musicians Haven, a nonprofit organization focused on providing opportunities for musical enjoyment. Based out of Claremore, Musicians Haven provides events like jam nights, vinyl nights, and intimate concerts. More information on Musicians Haven at musichaven.org or at facebook.com/musicianshaveninc.
Welcome back to another Press Play OK, your local music podcast. It is Tip, and with me in the studio, I have the longtime Tulsa band, The Fabulous Minx. You guys have a certain attitude that goes along with the band, and I feel like sometimes it's your personality, and I feel like sometimes it's the actual persona that the band itself has created. You know, I was watching a video of you all from, I think, 2013, and Ryan, I have to say, you looked a little camera shocked, and now you just kind of, it's almost like a wrestling promo with you now.
Yeah.
What's changed?
I mean, I'm older, so I'm like lower energy generally now, and don't have anything to prove to anybody anymore or anybody to impress left in my life, so I'm just, I could be me.
At this point, it's really, it's just a slow sliding into just mediocrity.
Yeah.
You know, we thought that maybe we did have something to prove at the beginning. We couldn't prove it.
No.
And so we've just kind of given up.
I mean, yeah.
When you try over and over
we always sound so depressed in all of our interviews lately, because it's like the last one we did was it was like they filmed us playing and then they interviewed us, and like, you know, because like after you play, the dopamine is all out of your, like all your feel-good chemicals are gone because you used them up playing, and you just like hit this post-show like slump. Mm-hmm. And like he like interviewed us in that immediate post-show slump, and we're just like tired and out of breath and like it's just a little depressed.
A little. It's like it's depressing to watch it. It's
so sad.
Go back, and it's
and
like
so defeatist.
I mean, usually that time is taken up by like you're tearing down and you're like moving stuff off, but
yeah,
this is like
he
just grabbed us and we're like, oh,
like the dread
in the world.
Yeah,
it's
man.
It's just like that darkness. Oof. Closes in.
Well, you get done and you're like, well, that was super fun. Things won't be that fun again for another few months until we play again. It was like, and that was the, was that the last show we played? Or no, we had one at the Mercury Lounge right after that.
No, actually, no, that was the last show.
That was the last thing we did before the world shut down.
Yeah.
That was it. And like, I was like, oh, it'll be a couple weeks. Then boom, a year and a half.
It's been kind of crazy over the last year and a half for musicians. I think that there are lots of different camps, you know, people who are ready to just jump back out there, people who are focusing on writing, people who are focusing on taking a break. What have you all done over the pandemic?
Well, actually, it was actually kind of good, somewhat, because we were kind of a mix of all those. So we had started recording some stuff in fall of 19 for a new EP. And
was it really fall of 19?
It was, yeah. Man. That's what's crazy. We laid down the original instrumental tracks.
All the bass tracks, yeah.
In like November of 19.
Mm-hmm.
And we would have laid down probably some vocal tracks in maybe early spring, late winter of 2020 before shutdown. And then we had this stuff, and then they were just kind of sitting there. And so we kind of took the time and did, I think we did some overdubs and stuff, took our time mixing and whatnot. So we had all that time.
And then we just sat on it.
We did.
We got it mastered, and then we just sat on it for like months and months and months. In the meantime, I didn't do any, I didn't like, my guitars got dusty.
Yeah, I
just sat around and got fat. I was really.
I didn't. Yeah, we didn't. Set like, it, like we didn't practice.
Baked a bunch of desserts. And respect to anybody who like took this as an opportunity to learn to do something new, or like
get
really
better.
Dig in and write their music, or like practice scales. I had every intention of doing that, and then like I think like month three, I just like put my guitar up on its little hanger on the wall and it hung there for like six more months before I got it back down. It was like, just couldn't, I had to throw myself into other things. So like I gardened, you worked on cars.
Yeah.
And learned to woodwork, right? Until wood got really expensive.
Yeah, until, yeah. Thanks, COVID. But yeah, it's like, it's one of those things. It's like, we were used to seeing each other like every week on the week.
Yeah.
And then we went, you know, 3-4 months without even really seeing each other.
We hadn't gone a month without playing a show since 2013, really.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, maybe like once.
Maybe once.
You started in 2013. You played as much as you could. I mean, you guys have played a lot of shows.
We played a lot of shows.
Was it maybe good for you to take a little bit of time to, I don't know, cool off a little bit?
Probably.
Refresh yourselves?
I'll say this. It certainly gave me like a good perspective on how necessary it is and like as part of my life. Because it just, Ashley, my wife, told me when she's like, you guys need to practice because you're just miserable when you're not playing music. Like you have to figure it out and go practice or something. You and Noah just go bang it out in the garage or something. Cause it's like, she's like, you're just the worst when you're just walking around here all like mopey, depressed about it. I was like, man, you're really right. But yeah, I think like the pace when we started in 2013, we literally just said yes to everything. I mean, we would play
like 8 shows a week.
Yeah. Both nights of the weekend and mm-hmm. one like midweek thing. And we would practice. And, that was really good for like forming our sound. And I think we were, since it was just the two of us, it's easy to get everybody together if there's only two people to get together. And then we add, you know, Notar, and then we add, Jill, and then we add Seth and Jill, and then, you know,
and they leave
and then they left. And then we added Kevin, and Kevin is like the most active. He has the most active schedule of anyone I've ever known.
He's always busy, but
trying to sync up our calendars and like figure out when we could play some shows before the world shuts down again. And we're like, man, we're just like, everybody's gone, you know, like October, November.
Yeah. September's tough. I felt like, I don't know if I'd have felt if it was that great. It was just like, kind of like Ryan said, it was a realization that you want it, you need it. But yeah, it was more like, crap, we have to learn all these songs again, because literally like the first practice back, I was just rough. Like, so oh rough. My gosh.
We couldn't even remember all of our songs.
Yeah.
We had to like hunt and find like an old crumpled up set list from like when we'd been hired to play like 2 hours of music, which is like our set. That's all of our songs probably twice, maybe three times.
Yeah. That was not like I did enjoy coming back to practice to learn songs that you've known for
Yeah, it was nice to have
years.
A fresh take at them. They all sound different than they were recorded. So
that's true.
You mentioned that you started out as a two-piece. Obviously, it's evolved a lot since then. You've had a lot of different members. What was the original idea whenever you first came out and had just a guitar and drum band?
Oh, that's super simple to answer.
Yeah.
So we were in a band. Originally, when Ryan and I met, we had this idea. It was like, we're old. You know, none of us, either he or I, thought that we would ever be in a band again from after college, being out like married and whatnot. And so I met him at a party and I said, oh, we should, you know, you play guitar, I play drums.
Well, he crashed a party at my house.
Yeah.
He got like sort of invited by, like he was out with some people who were like, oh, we have this party we're going to. And he's like, oh, I'm coming. And then he just literally walked up to me and was like, hey, you got instruments. I see that you have instruments. I also play instruments. We should play together.
Yeah.
And then like radio silence for
3 months.
Yeah, 3 months. And then I think my wife like shoved us into a practice.
Yeah, she like,
she's
hit
like
me
you
on
just go. Just go play music with this
see
guy.
What it, see what
I was like, I don't
like.
Know. He seems like kind of a tool, but
yeah,
that's fine.
Which I am.
And yeah. And it worked because I also am kind of a tool.
Yeah.
So
it's really, then you have a toolbox.
We meshed up a complete set.
so that's how we got together. And we're like, well, neither one of us had really sung in previous bands. So I was like, oh, I've got this girl. She's a really good singer. I don't know if she's going to be any good, but let's bring her in. So we were in. So we brought her in. So it was like drum, guitar, and then this really amazing singer. And we were called Shake Shake. Lindsay, who was the singer, she gets knocked up, and we're like, well, you're out of the
band. You say it like that. She's married.
She gets knocked up, and we kick her out of the band. Like, we're like, that's not our scene. No babies.
We love to say that. She left. She like,
yeah.
She was like, I'm going on a, well, what happened? So we had shows like we did. When we were Shake Shake, too, we'd just book as many shows as we could because it was the most fun to do. It was more fun than practice. And so we had like five shows lined up and she was like, hey, I am going on a last minute trip to New York before this baby comes. And also when I get back, I don't know that I'm going to be comfortable being in like smoky bars on stage while I'm this pregnant. And I'm like, fine. Cause you know, like we're 26. I'm like, fine, whatever. And she's like, you guys just keep those shows and play them without me. And so we were like, fine, we'll just, since it's a temporary thing at this point, we thought we're like, we'll call the band something different. The Fabulous Minx. Great. Like we'll play all these shows, you know, when she's ready to come back, we'll be Shake Shake again. And then she just never came back.
Yeah.
And so then
Ryan learned how to sing.
I learned how to sing. And it was like, you could hardly call it singing.
Nope.
And hollering is what I would say. And like,
we learned songs that we could sing, and we wrote songs that she would never want to sing.
Yeah.
So how did it grow into something bigger? How did you bring more people in?
Well, so Notar, who plays sax with us now, he's my brother. So by default, just like when we were little kids, like mom's like, hey, include your brother. So that's always kind of stuck with me. But it just happened that, before we were ever in a band, he had gone to, and I forget what it's called. It's the, Oklahoma School of Rock. It's like at, maybe it's called ACM, in Oklahoma City. And he had gotten a, associate's degree in music production. So he has this and he that's not his day job. That's what he wanted to do. So he has this associate's degree in music production. We start this band and he's like, well, I've got all these equipment. I've got all these microphones. I've got these hot rodded microphones. I've got this Hackintosh. We can record everything on. And, so we start recording. So he's our producer, right? Yeah. Is that the right term, I guess?
Yeah.
So he's our producer.
Naughty Notar Sears.
Yeah. And we'd always kind of like joked around, like we had this old Korg keyboard and we're like, oh, we should have Korg on this and Andrew could play, or Andrew Notar is the same person. Notar could play this Korg thing. We talked about that. And then from high school, he had played saxophone. And so we had like these two songs that he came up to us one day and he was always at practice. Like,
yeah,
it was like, it wasn't practice without having dinner, practicing, and Notar is there. I mean, yeah. that's kind of a normal
meetings
practice.
Yeah.
So he's there and he's like, hey, I wrote these parts to, was it Pretty Lady?
Pretty Lady and Hopeless, maybe?
Maybe it was Knife Fight.
Knife Fight.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got these saxophone parts and I want to play them. So in the beginning, it would just be like we'd play our set and we'd get to those two songs and we'd play them back to back. And for that, he would come up and, you know, it was kind of like a big fanfare type thing. And, and here's Naughty and non-saxophone is Naughty Notar Sears.
Yeah.
And he'd come up and he'd play that and everyone would go crazy. Well, then he's just like, oh, I've got a part for Please. Hey, I've got a part for Cadillac. Hey, I've got a.
Yeah.
And then it was just like he's on stage the whole entire time. So that's how we added him.
Grab my baby and I'm in the road. She's doing Jack Dead on the floor.
So now we're just like, we're really trebly, I guess is the right
word. Very top heavy as a band. And yeah, so then we're like, we're playing, we're getting ready to go out to this festival in Tucumcari, New Mexico for the third year.
Yeah, I think it was the third year.
Yeah, because it was us and then us and Notar. And then the third year is when we added Seth and Jill.
Jill. Just Jill. Yeah. And then so the next one was
we
Seth,
played with Bringer, who was at that point, I think, still the Loaded Dice.
Correct.
And Jill, the bass player, who's married to Seth, the lead guitar player. They were played like it was Rock and Roll Prom, maybe. And yeah. I'd had too much to drink.
Wait, oh, man, that was a fun time.
And I said, I was hassling her while we were like trading off on the stage. I was like, so when are you going to quit this stupid band and join our band instead? You know, we could really use a bass player, at least for Tucumcari. And they had gone out there with us the year before as the Loaded Dice. So we toured out there together and we always had a good time touring with them. We always...
In fact, that's the only people
we ever go touring with. Yeah. So we like hassled her enough that then like a couple days later she called and I didn't remember hassling her about it, but she called and was like, hey, were you serious? Did you want a bass player for Tucumcari? And we're like, yeah. So we practiced, she learned all the songs and we got back from Tucumcari and we just kept telling her when the next practice was. We're like, well, practice is Friday. Practice is Friday. You know, it's like, it was always Thursday, usually Thursday.
Yeah, Thursday.
Practice, night.
Yeah.
Practice is Thursday. And she just
she never said
coming.
No. Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's like, you know, and Seth would show up because we'd feed him.
Right.
Because Jill was there. It's like, you know, they're married. He doesn't have anything going on. So he's like.
Well, and he doesn't trust us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair.
Number.
And he, he'd show up for the food and then he'd sit and just like look at us while we played.
And he's like hyper talented. So it's like, I know he was watchful eye of Ryan the entire time.
Made me
like,
very self-conscious.
Ryan's not that good of a guitar player.
And finally, he like quietly asks Noah, he's like, I feel stupid standing in an audience. I hate it. Do you think Ryan would mind if I played rhythm guitar in the back?
And he's like, I don't want to sing.
I don't want to be
in the front. I don't want to be in the front.
Because he and I both have very strong like personalities as front people. And we like to be the star, you know. And I'm like, there's only room for one star. And so, I was like, you know what? He's a really talented guitar player. Like, has played in was raised in a traveling family band, like the, you know, the Dank Parsons and like, or Partridge Family. That's who I was thinking of.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, he's going to play lead guitar and then I can just play rhythm guitar so I can relax and like be a singer and not a guitar player. And so, yeah, they were in the band for 2 years after that.
Yeah, it was like 2.5 years. And then they were like, hey, or actually it was Jill. I think Seth would probably still be kicking it with us.
Yeah.
But she was like, hey, I've got too much on my plate. I'm volunteering.
We were running them too hard.
And air quotes don't show up on podcasts, but I'm volunteering at a women's shelter. Sure, whatever. Jill just...
She had a new job.
Yeah.
She like, you know, was already in another band and then played at their church. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I understand that you don't want to play a show every week. And we're getting ready to start going around as a three-piece again. But we'd written all these songs around having a bass and an extra guitar. And they sounded terrible as bassless songs and
bassless wonders.
And so we, Noah goes, well,
like, I've got look, this guy.
Maybe Kevin would want to come out and play with us for a while.
I've got this guy.
I've known him
for a long time. He's way older than us.
Yeah.
But he doesn't look that bad.
No, he's still a handsome guy.
Still a handsome dude.
You know, he's keeping it tight.
So we call up Kevin and he's all about it.
Yeah. Kevin also, by the way, an extremely talented guitar player who I relegated to bass in order to not have any competition as the star.
In any way or anything.
No, I will not be overshadowed.
So that's how we get to Kevin. And that's where we've been stuck because of pandemic. If pandemic didn't show up, we would have kicked Kevin out and we would have found another cute girl to play bass for us.
He knows it too.
Oh yeah. His time is borrowed.
Every day.
I remember when the beach. We were in, sun was blazing, the man so weak. On the boardwalk, getting wasted, while we wasted the day. I looked over, it was over, saw you looking my way. Now the mystery is in to a grave. Honey, honey, I'm afraid. The summer day is bound to fade. And tomorrow, well, tomorrow I'm waking up alone.
I'm up on a decade now playing shows in Tulsa, and I'm curious to get your perspective on how the Tulsa music scene has changed or how it's stayed the same over the last 8-10 years.
First of all, like, I've known that we've been playing for 10 years, and you know, Shake Shake started. We played our first practice together, Ryan and I, was on New Year's Eve.
Was it New Year's Eve or New Year's Day?
No, it was Eve. New Year's Eve.
Because we were both off work.
Right. Yeah. And of 2011.
11? Jeez.
Because it was New Year's Eve. So that's crazy to say 10 years. Yes, we've been doing this for coming up on 10 years together. Yeah. as at least
I don't
Ryan
have
and I.
any other friends that I've been friends with for 10 years.
I've so that's gotten really, rid of all of mine.
Yeah. It's slowly alienated all of my friends. And we were talking the other day, we're like, I think we'd be friends if we weren't a band together. I'm like, I don't think we would.
I didn't even get invited to his kid's birthday party tomorrow. Man.
That's really it.
And he's like, well, you know, it's kids. I'm like, yeah, I've got a kid. It's not like I'm going to just show up and be weird. I've got a kid to bring. So yeah, the Tulsa music scene over 10 years. So I grew up in Tulsa, and Ryan did too. I'm not going to speak for Ryan, but I was going to shows 15, 16, and seeing these punk bands come through and play at the different venues that aren't around anymore. So, you know, middle 90s, I hate to date myself, but middle 90s to late 90s. And seeing all those bands come through and, like, yeah, there were locals back then, and like Brother Inferior and NOTA, and we'd see those guys play, and you know, some of the members of Brother Inferior are still around and still playing. So, like, I have that perspective of where the scene was at that time, and maybe this is short-sighted on my end, but like, I went away to college right after high school, and it seemed like those shows, like the really cool, like, touring bands coming through Tulsa, like, it dried up about that same time, and it kind of pushed over to, like, Oklahoma City, and it was just kind of like a disconnect. I didn't have friends going to shows anymore. I felt like there wasn't a whole lot of bands coming through anymore, and maybe that, and like I said, short-sighted on my end because I wasn't following what the local scene was doing. Then we start playing, and we start meeting all these bands, all these, you know, great Tulsa bands that we're now friends with. There were those venues that, and they were, you know, all ages back in the 90s, and then they kind of went away. And I felt like, you know, it, again, from my perspective, I'm not saying that nothing was happening in Tulsa while I was gone. You know, gosh, talk about self-centered,
boy.
Right? Man. And then coming back and then seeing, like, the downtown resurgence, like, I felt like that, I mean, that, man, I'm going to boast on Tulsa, but that's just amazing. Just like, you know, it was McNelly's, and that was just like a little, like a spark.
Yeah.
And then it was like Sound Pony. Wait, Sound Pony's having shows. And then,
yeah.
Oh my gosh, Crystal Pistol. Crystal Pistol was from the 80s. Oh yeah. No, it's back. It's right next to the Sound Pony. And then it's like everything just blew up, and, you know, like the Mercury Lounge and all those great places.
Yeah.
So no, seeing that is like, man, it just makes me really proud to be here and to know all the local guys and becoming friends. Like I said, you know, the guys from the Brother Inferior, like, knowing them now, like, you know, seeing them on stage when you're 15 and they're up there and you're like, oh my gosh, they've toured all over the world and they're from Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then, like, knowing them, like, now, it's like, you know, like, some of the hardcore bands, metal bands from the early aughts that came out of Tulsa, and like now being friends with those guys, like, man, that's super cool. Like, I just feel like it's super cool. My take on it.
Yeah. I think it's become a really music friendly city. I mean, like, it really was when we started playing together, there was like a half dozen, maybe, places downtown, at least, like, places that we would be welcome playing, like, punk, loud music.
Yeah.
And now it's like, and we owe a tremendous like debt as a band to Jonathan, who, you know, bought the Crystal Pistol with his partners and turned it into the Yeti. And then who subsequently, when the Yeti closed, owned Rabbit Hole. The guys at the Sound Pony and the people who own the Mercury Lounge, like those three venues have really like given us some awesome opportunities.
Well, and not only us, but I mean all the other bands too.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Just like,
and I love like what Mercury Lounge is bringing through these national like mid-sized touring acts that would normally be playing somewhere bigger. And I think that that's like the coolest thing that I think is that there's, it was from my point of view, when we started playing, it was a really like, you know, well, pull yourself up sort of deal, like do it yourself. And if you get paid, great. And if you don't, well, that's, you know, what it is. And, that's great. I think when you're like us and you don't really like depend on that, you know, we're all like grown people with families and jobs and you know, we're not like trying to make a career out of it, but if you're trying to make a career out of it, like going a night without getting paid is hard and can really take the wind out of your sails. And, I think like the like outside of the bars, the societal support that there is for music in Tulsa right now, like with, what, you know, Abby did at FMAC, Abby Curran did, who we made friends with during our first time playing,
Center of the Universe,
Center of the Universe Festival. Came in, had she like walked, we were folding shirts for our merch box because we just printed them like the day before. And she came over and rolled shirts with us and like labeled them. Nice. And then she's like, you know,
we had no idea,
like single-handedly responsible for driving, like, you know, let's say 60% of like the really cool national things that come through here.
Well, and you know, all like the South by Southwest stuff.
A lot of the film stuff. Like,
yeah, that's
and
her.
She like, she's so kind as a person that she would like also help probably any young band she ran across that was folding shirts. She'd sit and roll shirts with them.
Yeah.
And, but I think like that level of support, that kind of top down support, not just bottom up support, like we used to get, you know, we could always bring people to shows. We'd show up on time. We'd stay around to get paid, which is like mind-blowing how many people disappear before they get paid.
We get it. It's like no one wants to be there.
But like, and we would be polite and, you know, respectful to the venue and not be jerks. And like that got us a lot of shows and we could bring people out. And that was like got us a lot of shows. And we would like, you know, harangue our friends into coming out. But like to have that top down support means that venues like the Mercury Lounge can bring through, Olivia Jean, who would normally play at a much larger venue, but who's going to play that small room because they have some funding. I think that like the fact that they have the ability to bring through big touring acts and put relatively small bands with those big acts is, really, really cool. And it just like plants a seed that I think is going to grow pretty fast once we can all relax a little bit, you know, and not be so scared to death when we're going places. So,
yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. You kind of point towards the people who help the bands out in Tulsa. I think that is absolutely one thing that makes us stand apart, like the Jonathan Robinsons and Abby and, and Julie Watson and mm-hmm. people who make things happen more on like a national level, but they also make things happen for the locals.
Yeah.
And they kind of bridge that gap that,
yeah,
I don't feel like oftentimes in the past that's been available to local bands.
No. And I think like you see it in places, and I can't obviously, like, I'm not part of those scenes, but like, I think the reputation that Austin and, you know, Nashville have as cities now is that if you're local, good luck, man. Like, national acts rule those towns now, even small venues.
Even small venues. I mean, we
South by Southwest, when I was like hearing about it in college, it was like, yeah, you go, you get your pass, you sleep in your car, and you're seeing all these like small local bands.
Well, local bands, they're like
they were touring bands. Yeah, yeah,
small punk bands. It was like that was South by Southwest. And now it's like,
oh yeah, Kanye West is playing a secret show at a 40-person bar. And it's like, well, you know, like, of course there's not any opportunity for like small bands to get a foot in there. And so I think like at a certain point or as like a scene, you make a choice that you'd rather have that big national presence coming through because it brings in a lot of dollars with it. But I think like what we have that's unique here is that, like you said, it's they really focus those dollars that they're using to bring acts through on using it to help bootstrap some local talent. And like, there have been some really cool bands that come out of here that end up doing really cool stuff. I mean, J.D. McPherson, that guy is doing incredible things. And the other thing that's unique about Tulsa is that musicians will help other musicians here. There's zero competition in this scene, which is really, really cool. Like, I remember Mary Beth Babcock had like a thing where she had Broncho play and J.D. McPherson play.
Yeah,
she paid for it all at Kane's and was like raising money for something or it was to celebrate her win of a grant or something like that. I don't remember what the circumstances were, but I was talking to her and she's like, you know, what's cool? J.D. McPherson introduced those Broncho guys to his manager because he likes them because they played at that show together and he decided that he wanted to give them a boost. And so, so that's the story I heard. I don't know how true that is, but like, from what I understand, that's how they got introduced to a lot of like, you know, what has allowed them to thrive as a band. So it's like, you know, you have stories like that where just, man, like what an incredible, cool chain of events for those people to support each other in that way.
One of my favorite stories is, you know, we put together this little, the Mercury really kind of threw us a bone here. They're like, yeah, you can play on St. Patrick's Day because it's St. Patrick's Day happens to be about the same time South by Southwest occurs. And I was like, I've got this really cool band. They're from Chicago. They're playing South by Southwest. They're coming up and we need a place to play and we want to play the Mercury. And they're like, well, we do this whole Mercury, you know, St. Patrick's Day deal, but we're going to let you guys play. We'll put you guys on after their, you know, the Irish drum line or whatever. And it was a great night. I mean, we made money. They paid us. They took a door charge and people paid it, which is awesome. You know, God, pay to see live music people.
Man, that $5 cover charge at the door goes so far to paying bands. Because like what that adds up to at the end of the night is a band gets, you know, a few $100 in their pocket.
Yeah.
And they can make it to the next place they're going.
So we play this thing, and it was just a great night. And this band from Chicago, and they're not, you know, they've been around for a while. And I walk up to them, and you know, they came over and they paid me. Mercury paid me, and I'm divvying up this money. And I always try to give more money to the touring band because I know they've got to get somewhere. And I walk up, and they're sitting there, and you know, it's the end of the night, and it's late, and I'm like, all right, guys, just got paid. Here's your $25, and I'm joking with them, and you know, like to me it's hilarious because it's like that's so ridiculous, but that's because we're from Tulsa. Like that's ridiculous because we're from Tulsa and we know that like it's gonna be more than $25. But they just like they're like, okay, cool, man. I'm glad we're getting $25, and I'm like, man, that hits so hard because I'm like, no, man, I've got like $500 for you. Like, yeah. And they're like they literally like they were like tearing up. They were like.
Yeah,
they were
like this so gets us like, all through our Texas leg. And
yeah,
like,
yeah, like that. That was more money that they made that night. They made than the whole week being down in South by Southwest playing. I think they told me they played like 8 different house shows.
Yeah,
and they got nothing for it. And to make their day and to get them back to Chicago. I mean, like that's just awesome. I don't remember how much we got paid, but I remember paying them, and like that's.
It wasn't nothing. I mean, like we.
No, we. I mean, know. We always come out all right. I
yeah.
Mean,
But it's
to yeah. make their night was just gosh, that was awesome.
Yeah, people's willingness here to pay a $5 cover charge is really great. It's excellent. And venue owners' willingness to part with that money is also excellent here. Like that's I don't think common.
No, people don't realize. I mean, how much it just like, man.
Yeah.
Well, it makes you pumped up at the end of the night.
And it's important for bringing those national acts in
right.
that people want to see and especially the mid-level ones who can't make it unless they have that, you know, to get to the next stop.
Yeah.
So, yeah. You
know. And $10 isn't much, people.
Well, Ryan, Noah, thank you so much for hanging out with us today and for getting, you know, a little bit deeper into the Fabulous Minx, and I look forward to hearing.
Well, it's a shallow well.
we've scraped the bottom a couple times.
Well, I look forward to hearing the next thing you release, and maybe it'll come from a big, fancy, pretty studio. Maybe it'll come from what you guys have already been doing. Either way, I'm excited to hear some new music from you and get back to playing some shows.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully that happens soon.
Hopefully.
Hopefully.
We'll see.
Wear your mask, people.
Yeah, seriously. Well, thank you guys for hanging out with me, and keep an eye on you here at RC Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks again to the Fabulous Minx for coming out and talking with us on Press Play OK. You can hear this and more episodes wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or rscradio.com. I also wanted to say thank you to the band for being patient and understanding. This episode took us months to get out because of editing issues, file corruption. It's almost like someone didn't want us to put it out. Be sure to hit subscribe if you haven't already. We'll see you next time right here on Press Play OK.